Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and today we're going to be talking about how you can create outstanding bird habitats with native plants. Our guest today, Mariette Nowak, is the former director of the Weir Nature Center of the Milwaukee County Park System and is the author of Birdscaping, not Landscaping, Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds. It's published by Itchy Cat Press. Mariette's now retired, is a board member of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology, former national vice president of Wild Ones, Native Plants, Natural Landscapes, and she's active with the Walworth County Land Conservation and the Walworth County Park Committee. And I've had a chance to go to look through her book and read parts of it, and it's a beautiful book packed with a lot of great information for those of us who garden here in the Midwest, seven Midwestern states, how to create bird habitats with native plants that offer all kinds of things, food, cover, nesting sites for birds, and illustrated with some beautiful photographs. Mariette Nowak, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'm glad to share this topic because it's a very important one to save our common birds and keep our common birds common and attract even some of the more unusual birds, the rarer birds.
And judging from the photographs and so forth in the book, also create some beautiful landscapes for your home.
Right. It's just, it makes your whole, it's like having a park out, right out your back door or front door even.
Yeah, I tell you, the photos, the writing is very good. The photos are just beautiful, and you had some help with the photos.
Oh, right. My husband took some of the photos, and of course I did too, but one of the great photographers in Wisconsin, Jack Bartholomew, donated all of the, most of the bird pictures in the book, and he's a member of the Wisconsin Society of Ornithology and has donated his wonderful photographs for the Breeding Bird Atlas and the Important Bird Areas of Wisconsin new book that just came out. So he's really a great photographer, and I think you'll see that in the photos in the book.
And Lori Otto's in there from the Wild Ones, and Neil Harriman of the UW Oshkosh Herbarium as well helped
right,
out
right.
with it. So lots of people involved.
Oh, yes, yes. I had a lot of help from and all the gardeners, too, who gave me photographs, let me see their yards, and inspired me, and I'm sure they'll inspire the readers, too.
I want to give our listeners a chance to phone in, and we already have some on, and we'll get to Jim in a minute and Judy as well. But if you'd like to join in with your question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org, and we'd be happy to get you on that way as well. Maybe, Lori, before we take our first call, you can describe how your book is organized and what you've got in it. Lots of things in there.
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, I do have a section, well, just an introduction about the coevolution between plants and birds. And it's just a fascinating story about how they are mutually helpful to one another. And then I also describe yards in each of the eight Midwestern states and the gardeners and why and they began their landscaping and the birds that they are able to attract. And then I have a section about just getting started and all the nuts and bolts of actually landscaping. And then the heart of the book is actually how to create habitats for different groups of birds or different particular birds. For example, the hummingbird garden, prairie bird garden, the bluebird, savanna garden. Bluebirds are really savanna birds and so forth. And I have nine different habitats like that. And then I have charts with all the plants and their cultural requirements and the states to which they're native. And finally, I have a section on maintaining and enhancing your bird garden through the years. And then I also have sources for you, too.
Lots of sources back
right
there. Yeah, so there's lots in here. Judy in Cedarburg, I believe, is first. Let's go to Judy. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a master gardener, and I've engaged the assistance of the Ozaukee Master Gardeners to work with me. We're developing some gardens around a residential care center in Cedarburg, Lasada Care Center. And we planted some flowers, sunflowers, purple coneflowers, et cetera, but there's no birds. No birds are coming.
Wow, that is unusual.
Yeah, I'm just amazed. You know, we put out bird seed feeders, but there's very, very few birds.
Okay, well, for one thing, there has been a big discussion on the WizBirdNet recently about bird seed. There's a lot of variety of bird seed, so at this time of year, bird seed, it does bring in the birds particularly. So I would suggest getting pure sunflower seed to begin with, and that is the seed that attracts most birds.
Okay.
And some of the cheaper seed mixes are really, the birds will just throw a lot of the excess seed that they don't like out the, you know, on the ground and so forth. So try pure sunflower seed to begin with. That's one of the best. And then pure, I like to try, you know, have feeders with just the pure seed in, because that attracts that particular bird or those kinds of birds that like that seed. For instance, thistle feeders will attract thistles, finches and sparrows.
Rather than the mixtures, you mean?
Yeah. Right, rather than the mixtures. I prefer that, although there are some good mixtures, too. But I think I'd start with that, especially since you're having trouble attracting them. And then as far as all those plants that you've planted, you haven't cut them down over the winter, have you?
No. I left them out like I do at home, and I have little birds sitting on them pecking away all the time.
Ah.
But here I do not see that.
Do you have any trees around your area, or brush, or bushes?
There's a few,
maybe part of it.
I don't know. The other thing is sometimes if you have someone managing the lawns and so forth, maybe there's too many pesticides on the being used in the vicinity. Do you happen to know about that aspect of it?
I don't know.
Now, that might be a factor that you could look into. But at any rate, it's a little unusual. Maybe water, too. That is very attractive to birds all seasons. And at this time of year, a heated bird bath might be, I would think, would be very attractive to birds. I know my birds like it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something that we were thinking about for next summer, but maybe that is something we should invest in now.
Yeah, actually, they're not all that expensive. We have one, and they do attract. Birds seem to really love it.
Oh, I have one at home, too, and I love it. And I have a little water wiggler in there, and I even had a sparrow taking a bath the other day.
And it's cold. Yeah, I know. I don't know how they do it.
Good luck, Judy. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And, you know, pick up a copy of Mariette's book as well, Birdscaping in the Midwest. That might help you out, too. Jim and Elkhorn, your turn now. Hi, Jim.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I'm from Walworth County also, and I have a small farm, and I've set a few acres aside with wildflowers and some prairie grasses, and attracting the birds isn't a problem for me, but I am having a problem with Chinese elms taking over my prairie area. Do you have any solution to that?
Well, I did have Chinese elm in my yard, too, in Walworth County. And what I did is I girdled the tree that was the source of the seeds. Now, I don't know if you have a lot of larger ones. I only had one, fortunately, but I did notice those little seedlings coming up all over. And if I hadn't girdled that, now we just girdled it. You girdled a tree by taking the bark off in a ring a few yards high or even near the base. But you take the bark all around for about 3 to 6 inches in width, and that'll gradually kill the tree. It actually took a couple of years. Those Chinese elms are pretty sturdy trees, but now we are eliminating all those small seedlings that did come up, and that's been a great help. And besides, you left the tree there, and it's a great perch for birds.
Oh, okay.
Yeah
it's those grow like weeds in my yard.
They are terrible.
How fast they sprout up. I can't believe it.
Yep, I agree with you, and they have deep roots, too.
Yes, they do. They're longer than the tree, I'm afraid.
That's why the girdling can work so well.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you would suggest a couple feet up above the ground.
That's what we did. Yeah.
And then 3 to 6 inches.
Yeah, 3 to 6 inches width all the way around. Take that bark off so that there's no movement of water and food up and down the tree.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck with that.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call.
We're talking about how you can use native plants to create outstanding bird habitats. Our guest, Mariette Nowak, who is the author of the book, Birdscape of the West. I lost it for a minute in my brain here, but I got it back. Birdscaping in the Midwest, a guide to gardening with native plants to attract birds. It's published by Itchy Cat Press. And I tell you what, it's a beautiful, beautiful book. If you have a question about plants that might attract birds, or maybe you're interested in particular birds that you'd like to attract to your place, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and with your comments. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Email us at talk@wpr.org. You mentioned this ancient collaboration between birds and plants. How does that play out?
Well, plants need birds for many different reasons. For one thing, the birds will eat the insects that are ravaging or could ravage the plants. They hummingbirds will pollinate the trees and other plants, the herbaceous species, too. And in addition, birds are one of the greatest dispersers of the seeds of trees and plants. Over 300 different species of trees and shrubs and vines are dispersed. Their seeds are dispersed by birds eating their fruits and seeds and then dropping the seeds either by regurgitating or defecating and dropping the seeds in a new place where the seeds will grow better. And then the plants, in order to attract birds to do all these different jobs for them, have evolved such that they can attract birds in more ways. And they have beautiful flowers that are shaped just perfectly for hummingbirds to pollinate. And they have these luscious fruits to attract birds to feed on them. Very attractive colors, too, to attract the birds. And they also, of course, plants offer their limbs and for mm-hmm. nesting sites and the cover that the trees provide and so forth and the shrubs. So all of these ways, it's a mutual interdependence, and they've co-evolved yeah. together.
Yeah, and it's an interesting, you don't stop to think about it, but boy, that really is the case. Thomas in Janesville has a question for you. Tom, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there. Yeah, I'm actually calling for my son, Thomas. He's got a bunch of bird feeders in the yard, and they have specific seed in each of the feeders to attract different birds, but he wanted to know what he could use to attract the tufted titmouse.
Hmm. Well, at my yard, they love the peanut feeder. I don't know if you have a peanut feeder, but that's the one they like most. But they'll eat some of the other seeds, too. They do like sunflower seeds. But I'd say the peanut feeder is their favorite in my yard. Did you try that?
Yes, actually, we do have a peanut feeder. And my wife, who's here with me, really was excited because she's got each of the feeders set up with different seed, and so we had the hummingbirds coming, and actually we have blue jays now, we've got the finches, we've got all sorts of birds coming into the yard, and they're just flocking to the area because there's so many feeders now.
But you haven't gotten the titmice.
We have not gotten.
Okay, well, you know, I don't know where did you say you live? They are a kind of a
Janesville area.
Janesville. They should, yeah, you'd think you'd have them down there.
What about shrubs or plants or so forth that might attract birds like the tufted titmouse?
Well, they do like wooded areas better. You know, for the first few years I lived in Walworth County, I didn't get them very often either, but my neighbor who lived in a more wooded area got them regularly. But they're increasing in my area now, so they're regularly in my yard. So
I guess they do like a little bit of some trees.
Yeah, right. And they nest in tree holes and so forth. So sometimes you need the right habitat. And, that, of course, you could start a woodland habitat if you have the yard to do that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And let's see. On to Janet in Spring Green. Hi, Janet.
Hello.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I wanted to add something to that. You were talking about wasted seed that the birds waste. I buy most of my seed separately. Like I can get millet. I usually get it at Herb Seed, and they'll, in Mount Herb, and they'll So just the millet.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have the waste of the stuff that they don't. I also use pinch feed and cracked corn and, of course, the black cow oil, sunflower seed. Another thing about the water, those dog dishes that you have for water to keep the water from freezing,
mm-hmm.
that's a pretty inexpensive way to provide water for them.
Oh, using a dog dish.
Yeah.
Ah, not a bad idea, too. Thank you very much for calling, Janet. Appreciate it. Mariette Nowak, our guest today, author of Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening and with Native Plants to Attract Birds, published by Itchy Cat Press. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking today about how you can create outstanding bird habitats with those plants that you put out in your lawn and your landscape. Mariette Nowak, author of Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds, our guest today, and she can tell you about the plants. She can also tell you how to set up the landscape. In her book, she's got some beautiful drawings about, and obviously as well, some beautiful photographs of people who have done the great job, but then she's got the descriptors and the diagrams to show you kind of how to lay out some things, too, to make it really attractive and at the same time attract birds. So, again, if you have a question, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Tamsin in Bloomingdale, you are next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Here's the background. My sister and I are both gardeners and bird feeders and talk back and forth every week. She lives out near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and so it's much warmer. She's about a zone 5 out there, and of course she always tries to make me jealous about how early she's planting her peas. But we were talking last week, and I told her that I had found a patch of bittersweet growing on kind of a shrubby part of my property, and I was excited about it just because I think of it as a bird feeding plant, and she was horrified by it, the idea that it was on my property, because out there they consider it really invasive. And I guess I feel a little bit protected since I have, you know, so much of a harsher climate here, more like zone 3.5 or so.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, if it is an invasive, should I actually be worried about this and get rid of it, or is it okay to have it out there?
What do you think, Mariette?
Well, there are two species of bittersweet, so that's what you have to find out, which kind you have. There is an American bittersweet, and that's the one that you, if you have that, that's wonderful. You're very lucky. That's a beautiful plant, and it is not invasive. However, there's an Asiatic type of bittersweet, and that is the one that's most common, and it is definitely invasive, and it's invasive even in southern Wisconsin, and people are starting to try to get rid of it because they're realizing how invasive it is. But it was planted originally because it is beautiful and so forth, but and the birds will eat both of them, but it is terribly invasive, and you wouldn't want to have it. So try to figure out which one you have.
Yeah, are there some things that would help?
Well, at this time of year, if you have the fruits, that's the easiest way to tell the plant, because the American bittersweet has orange partly
berries?
Orange on the top, arils like, but the berry itself is red. Mm. And the European, or I think it's Asiatic, really, the Asiatic invasive one has yellow parts to it. So if it's red and orange, that's good. And the native ones are a little bigger and showier, too.
Mm.
Okay. And then the Asiatic is altogether yellow, or just the...
No, it's yellow and I think orange more.
Orange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if it's, I said, orange and red.
And is it a bright
native.
Red?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty bright red. Okay.
There's a picture in my book on page 262.
We'll have to look at that then.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And on to Ann in Menominee Falls. Ann, hello to you.
Hello. Thanks for the program.
Sure.
My question is, I was hoping your guest would talk about buckthorn and its invasive nature, what its effect on birds is, and also if she has some suggestions for eradication.
That is a bugaboo, isn't it?
Yeah, buckthorn is one of the greatest invasives in our area, and I'm glad you asked about it because invasive shrubs like buckthorn and honeysuckle both are harmful to birds in that they, first of all, the buckthorn is, part of its name is cathartica because it does tend to give birds diarrhea, and because it also takes over it an area, it wipes out all the native plants that would be available all year long. In addition, they found, particularly for honeysuckle, but also buckthorn to some extent, that they attract birds to nest in them lower down, but they're because their limbs are strong lower down, and our native plants, our native shrubs, aren't quite like that. So birds tend to nest lower down, and that there's more access by predators like cats and so forth. So the nests in those non-native shrubs are much more apt to be preyed upon by cats and raccoons and so forth. So to have successful nesting, we need to introduce our native shrubs.
And how do we get rid of the buckthorn? That's the big...
I have to say I'm very proud of the fact that my husband and I finally got rid of all of ours in our two-acre property just last year. At any rate, what you do is you can do several things. For the larger ones, you can girdle them like I talked about for the Chinese elm, a 3 to 6 inch removal of the bark around the trunk. The easiest way, because there's lots of limbs often for a buckthorn, is to cut those off and then treat them within 1 minute with Roundup, or there are a few other herbicides that are sometimes used. We've usually used Roundup. And you can also, the small ones you could pull out right after a rain or something if you have lots of little seedlings. And if you want to get started, get the ones that are fruiting first. There's male and female ones. And get the ones that have the fruit on first, because sometimes you have a big job and you can't get them all at once. But I'm glad to hear you're working on that. Great.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, with a couple of acres, I'm sure you and your husband spent more than an hour or two out there getting rid of that buckthorn.
It took us about 5 years.
Yeah, it's not a – unfortunately, it's not a, an easy process.
No, it isn't.
That's done really quickly, because you can get them all for a year, but then the next year you're going to have some that are going to
Yeah, unfortunately, we still have too many around, and the birds do bring them in when they drop the seeds after feeding on the berries. Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's go to Jerry in Platteville next. Jerry, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I wondered what happened to all the black-capped chickadees. We've been feeding birds for like 20-some years. Used to be one of our main birds. Now, all of a sudden, the last 3 or 4 years, we don't see any.
Huh.
Wow, that is unusual. I do know that with West Nile disease in the Chicago area, once there was a great reduction of chickadees, and I don't know if for some reason the West Nile is more prominent in your area. I haven't heard of that elsewhere, though, and I'm hoping maybe over the winter you'll be able to attract them again. Are you offering the black oil sunflower seeds?
Yes, that's our main seed.
Oh,
and
really?
We also have the mixed grain.
Yeah,
too.
My, that
we
is...
We have juncos and all kinds of cardinals, blue jays, mm-hmm. and sparrows, of course, but I've never... Last 3 or 4 years, we haven't seen one black cap.
Oh, that is rather frightening. Yeah, that's why we need to do this natural landscaping, birdscaping all over. We need to keep our common birds common. And I really don't have an answer for you that. I don't know why you don't have any chickadees, but I certainly hope they'll show up.
Sometimes it's a local thing. One thing you might do, and I don't know if you like this website, Mariette, but ebird.org. And you can go online to that particular website, I know, and find out what the status is for a particular area of the country for specific birds, like the chickadee. So that's something you might just take a look at, Wisconsin, and take a look at what people have reported to the website. Thanks for calling. Dean in Madison, we'll go to you next. Hi, Dean.
Well, I just have a comment about bittersweet, native bittersweet. The berries form at the end of the branch rather than along the branches.
And yes, that's a good way to determine, too. Thanks for mentioning that.
Yeah, the European ones do not always form at the end.
The That's right. They form along the branch rather than at the end. I had the experience. I planted bittersweet at our farm, and it turns out it was the Asiatic one.
Oh.
So it's a bad one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for that, Dean.
Too bad.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. You can join in, too, if you have a question. As we talk about creating bird habitats with plants here in Wisconsin and actually throughout the Midwest. Mariette Nowak's book actually applies to several states in the Midwest, but zeroes in certainly on Wisconsin as one of them. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890, and email us at talk@wpr.org. Before we go back to the phones, when you're talking about native, and you have native in the title, the subtitle at least, how native is native when it comes to local ecotypes?
Okay, well, the term local ecotype refers to getting plants that are really local to your area. Native plants are defined by most ecologists and botanists as those plants that were in an area before European settlement, and in our area that was usually in like the 1800s and so forth. So those are the plants that are considered native. And it's best to choose the plants that are in your local ecoregion. Right here, we're in the prairie forest border in the Madison area. There's also two other ecoregions as determined by Nature Conservancy in Wisconsin, the Great Lakes region, and then the northern area, the Superior Mixed Forest area, I believe it's called. So Nature Conservancy has defined ecoregions as well as the EPA. Mm-hmm. And so you could, you know, and sometimes they're even more finely defined. But the more local plants you get, the more a local seed, those are the plants that will do best because they're adapted to your particular soils, your particular climate, temperatures, and so forth. And so they're better for gardeners, too. And it's best to try to keep those local genes and use those plants.
Yeah, and you certainly discuss that in the book in some detail.
In detail, right.
In some detail, yes. We'll take some more calls here again. The number 1-800-642-1234. And Bob, I believe in La Crosse, is next. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about the buckthorn. I'm a tree removal specialist. Do a lot of stuff around power lines and such. And we run into it every day. And we use a lot of Garlon 4. It's a non-restricted use herbicide, which means anybody can get it. It's a little tricky to find. Usually you have to order it like at a feed store or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But what you do is you just spray a ring around the tree. It's a lot less labor intensive, and it's a real mild herbicide, so it won't leach into your other trees and such.
Garlon 4. And
I believe that is sometimes recommended. It sounded a little more scary for me to use because I looked at all the warnings on it. So I don't know. But Garlon is a good one, and I know it's used by people. When you do it safely, that's great. And it is a very it is easier. That's an important aspect of it, yes.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob.
All right. You're welcome.
Garlon 4. Okay. Roy in Chippewa Falls. We'll go to you now. Hi, Roy.
Hi. Hello. I'd like to know about building or having wrens in my garden, in my backyard, make their own nest instead of inhabiting one of my wren houses. Is that possible?
Well, you have to have some snags or dead standing trees, or, you know, if you have something like that, wrens will nest in those areas. But, yeah, they're kind of well adapted to nesting in our nest boxes, too.
Yeah, I've got about seven wren houses, and they're just not working out.
Oh.
You mean you're trying to keep them for the other birds?
Yes.
Yeah, I know wrens can be a little aggressive, and I'm a little disappointed sometimes in my own yard. Although they are cute, and they certainly have a wonderful little song. Usually earlier in the season, you might have better luck with our other native birds because the wrens tend to nest a little bit later, say, than bluebirds. So, the only other thing I would suggest is maybe the placement can be important. Try to keep the the boxes for wrens in the wooded areas or near woods, and if you have a real open area, you might have better luck with bluebirds or swallows or something. Yeah, but they are native birds, and they are protected, so we cannot, you know, you can't remove their nests or anything. You have to, you know, by it, legally they are protected because they are native birds.
But they do like snags, so they'll nest in snags.
Sure, they'll nest in holes, cavities, too, in trees, mm-hmm. Right?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Tom, actually from St. Louis, but I believe he's driving through town here. Tom, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I just wanted to give a little plug that many environmental groups and even people like the Audubon Society are encouraging people to keep domesticated cats indoors. It's healthier for the cats, but also it's become a very big issue with native birds and songbirds. People even letting loose declawed cats. You know, cats are predators, and they try to catch these birds. And it's a real, you know, it's if people want to feed the birds and develop birds, they need to make sure they keep their cats indoors.
Well, I tell you what, Tom, I don't often give my stance on something, but I agree with you 100%.
And I agree with you 100% too. Yeah, cats. I consider cats one of the big invasives, besides our invasive shrubs and plants, and so some of the other plants and so forth. But yeah, cats are really invasive. They aren't native here, and they are killing millions and millions of birds across the country. And more research is determining this. And so it is very important to keep them indoors. And it is healthier.
Well, they live about twice as long. If you kept cats that are
right.
Indoor cats will live about twice as long as those that get left.
Sure.
Left to run out on their own. So, Tom, you're not going to find any argument in this studio with what you have to say, and it is a good thing to remember. And I thank you. Lori in La Crosse, it's your turn next. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I'm glad that you could take my call.
Sure.
When I moved to La Crosse, I have an acre property surrounded by woods, and I had this interesting plant almost becoming a weed, in my opinion, at that time, and it had small yellow flowers kind of looking like orchids. Later, I found it was called jewelweed. The birds just absolutely love it. It's very prolific. But now this year, I also found out that another name they call it is touch-me-not. And when the seeds ripen, if the birds bump the bush, the little seed pods actually explode, and the birds will eat them off the ground, or, you know, the plant will spread. But I also found out that the seeds are edible for humans, and I'm allergic to nuts, and I found that they're an excellent replacement for nuts in certain recipes. It takes quite a while to harvest them because they're very tiny, but the birds absolutely love them. They're drawn to the flowers. It's a very thick plant, so they kind of hide in there. They love the seeds, and it's actually a very pretty plant edging my yard.
Huh. It is a great plant, and it's one of the hummingbird's favorite nectaring plants also, so I'm glad you have it. In fact, they feel that hummingbirds kind of follow the blossoming of the touch-me-not or jewelweed as they're going south. It's because it is one of the last nectar-producing plants for hummingbirds, so as they're going south and migrating, so it's a great plant for hummingbirds, and evidently you've seen a lot of other birds in it too. Yes, it's just wonderful.
Now, is that native or?
Oh, it's definitely native.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, because I haven't really seen it anywhere else other than around my yard, and the person that had the house prior to my buying it was a very interesting landscaper bringing in all kinds of different plants, so I didn't know if that was brought in special.
No, it is a good native plant, and I'm glad that you have it, and it just shows how even, it should be sort of common plant is rare. You haven't seen it. That's the trouble. We are losing our native plants. People don't even know what's native anymore. So thanks for mentioning that. It's a great plant, and I hope everybody plants it.
Oh, great. Thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Frank in New Glarus next. Frank, hi to you.
Hi. I'm wondering what has happened to all our meadowlarks.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a meadowlark around for several years.
Meadowlarks are one of the grassland birds or prairie birds that are becoming very, very rare. They generally need a larger habitat than many of us can provide in our yard, even with little prairie gardens. That's why, in addition to landscaping in our homes, we need to support those efforts to save large expanses of prairie. I know that the state DNR is trying to do that, and also the Important Bird Areas Program is working on large expanses of habitat. So support those areas, and Nature Conservancy too. Support all those all of those groups that are trying to preserve large areas, because that's what we'll need for meadowlarks and some of the other more rare birds that do need large expanses of habitat.
Well, I understand what Frank's getting at. As a younger guy and growing up on a farm in a rural area, one of the beautiful sounds that I liked to hear was the meadowlark, the song of the meadowlark, and haven't heard that song in a long, long time. So you make some very good points. And unfortunately, it's not one of those birds that we're going to attract to your back lawn in an urban area.
Right. If you have a farm or something, do what you can to create prairie, and then you'll be able to attract and save more of our meadowlarks.
Let's go to Dee Dee in Buffalo City next. Dee Dee, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I wanted to speak to the titmice matter.
Yeah.
I've been feeding birds here on the banks of the Mississippi for about 16 years and longing for titmice.
Yeah.
And not until last year did I start having titmice. I'm watching the...
Oh, we lost you. Are you there? Oh, shucks.
Well, let me just mention that titmice are one of those southern birds that are sort of increasingly coming north. So that might be why this particular person had them after many years of not having them. So, and I think that's why they're increasing in my yard, too.
Yeah, it could well be. Could well be. Mariette Nowak, our guest today, she is the author of the book Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds, published by Itchy Cat Press. It's a beautiful book with a lot of great information. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're talking creating outstanding bird habitats with plants and our guest, Mariette Nowak, author of Birdscaping in the Midwest. Give us a call. We have an open line so we can get you on at 800-642-1234, Madison 263-1890. And email us, too, at talk@wpr.org. Barb in Madison is next, so let's go to Barb. Hi, Barb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
We have a problem. We moved in a new development that used to be farmland, and it has, of course, barns and so forth. And we have barn swallows that nest under our deck, and I love having them. But they attack us when we go down there, and it's not just two of them. They, like, get their extended family to come, especially, I think, when the birds are ready to hatch. Is there an answer to that?
So you have a deck that you can walk under, I assume.
Yes,
that's
right.
Sort of a second-story deck.
Right.
Yeah. There are ways to do that, I think, Mariette.
Well, that's one problem I don't know the answer for. I haven't heard about that, but it may be common in rural areas that I'm not aware of. They are protected birds, so I'm not sure.
One of the things you can do, and I'm just thinking about what Scott Craven might say, is you can see underneath your deck, you're going to have areas where they can sort of put their nest in, and there is a webbing that you can put underneath your deck that you can stretch across the underside of the deck that will not allow the birds to put their nests in.
Well, we tried screening, but that came down when the ice formed and all the bears hanging. So where do you find this webbing?
You can go to any garden center, and I'm trying to think of the proper name of it. Somebody call in and remind me. It's a bird. It's a netting that is works very well for birds. The other way, I mean, if you wanted to do something permanent, you could probably nail up some hardware cloth.
I just love having them. I really do, because my granddaughter and I enjoy what. But boy, they do. They come about 6 inches from your head.
Yeah.
They've attacked our neighbors on both sides.
Oh yeah. Well, they get in my boat hoist too from time to time, and when they get a nest in there, and I go to get in my boat,
I get the same treatment.
Okay, so it's normal. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling, although I've never had one just actually hit me or anything.
Yeah.
But they do fly pretty close. Harley in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Harley.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling in regards to those Chinese elm trees. If they grow real fast and have deep roots, wouldn't they be an ideal tree?
The thing about it is that they send off, they produce a lot of seeds, and those seeds take off all over. There's little seedlings all over the place, and pretty soon you're just going to have a whole grove of Chinese elms. It's just like the buckthorn and other invasive species.
That's the problem.
Oh, is that an invasive tree?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling. Well, wait a minute now. Harley, you're in Milwaukee, and you want to plant a tree? Is that your...
Well, my dad always used to recommend planting those trees back around when we had the Dutch elm.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, that's when I think they started coming in, yeah. But then they didn't realize how invasive they are at that time, yeah.
Yep, that's it. Thank you for calling, Harley. Let's go to Barb in Muscadet next. Barb, hi.
Hi. You were talking about jewelweed.
Yes.
I understand jewelweed kind of likes a wetter area. They find it in springs and stuff. It's extremely good to have to rub the juice on poison ivy or stinging nettles or anything that's a skin condition like that. I had a terrible case of poison ivy a few years ago, and an old neighbor here went down and got some jewelweed, and it worked fantastic.
Oh, that's good. I knew that was always said about it, but I didn't have a personal example like that. Well, that's great to hear about.
Yeah, we've got a native garden here, but we haven't started any jewelweed yet because we're on the extreme sandy area with no running water, but I want to give it a try.
And, you know, jewelweed often grows, phoned in about this or emailed us, that jewelweed is said to be an antidote to stinging nettle as well, and they often grow nearby. The jewelweed often grows by nearby the stinging nettle, so that's another one as well.
Yeah. Well, we've got stinging nettles around here without a doubt. I think they like drier land than jewelweed does. You find jewelweed around any swampy area or something.
Yeah.
Right, you do need a little bit of dampness for that.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Appreciate the call, Barb. 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Mariette, you highlight in your book various gardens in the Midwest, and you've got Pat and Carl Burst's property in Franklin. That's a Milwaukee suburb that you highlight. Talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Pat and Carl Brust were not even gardeners to begin with, but they liked birds and they wanted to attract birds. So that's how they got into native landscaping. And Pat now is the head of the president of the Ware Nature Center chapter of the Wild Ones. And she is very dedicated. And their yard is just a very lovely yard. It's a corner lot. They have prairie and a little bit of woodland and shrubland. And they've worked a lot on their yard and done it gradually. If you have a larger yard, you just do one part at a time, which is what they did, and they've been very successful in attracting all of the common birds, and they've also had some very rare ones. They had a European brambling there once, and they had native birds, they've had a summer tanager, which is pretty rare to have in a yard, and also the orange-crowned warbler came one winter, and it was a record in Wisconsin that winter, and many birders have come to see some of their rare birds. So, it's a great yard.
It's a beautiful yard. You have some wonderful photos
here
of the yard to give others some ideas along with the description.
That's right.
So it's a beautiful, beautiful yard. Peggy in Pittsville, your turn. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. I just want to suggest that people plant mulberry trees. They don't draw the birds in the winter, but the spring and the summer you get cedar waxwings, tanagers, finches, chickadees, and they are ripened for several months. So you have a lot of birds that come in then.
That is a great tree, and I have mulberries in my yard, too. The red mulberry is the native one, and that's the one that has those nice red berries that are more attractive to birds. So, yes, I highly recommend that. And They're a little messy. Some people don't like them near their, say, their sidewalks or patios or something. But otherwise, they're just terrific plants for trees for birds.
We have one in between in lots. Actually, it's on my neighbor's property, but it hangs over my property considerably. And I don't mind it because you really attract the birds. When those berries are out there, man, they're there in force.
And they're very good, too, to taste, you know, for us, too. They're very tasty. We sample some every year, too.
Thanks, Meg.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Susan in Menominee, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. My husband bought me a cute little book last year about native Wisconsin flowers, and I discovered we have a little patch of what was called devil's paintbrush.
Uh-huh.
And I wondered if this is, you know, it started out as a little patch, and then the next year it
got a little bigger.
It got quite bigger, yeah. So I'm just wondering if this is would be a good one for me to let spread or.
Mm-hmm. There are native paintbrush plants in Wisconsin. I haven't heard the term devils in front of it, but if it's the native one, that is great, and it's a great hummingbird plant too. And it's one that is not easily planted in your yard because it is somewhat parasitic on the roots, and it usually needs. Do you have oaks there? I believe I heard. I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be parasitic on some oak roots and so forth. Do you have oaks there?
Do you have oak trees?
No, we have a lot of big tall pine trees around us and mm-hmm. a lot of birch.
Well, anyway, yeah, if it's the native one, and I think it probably is because I don't know of any non-native paintbrush, yes, let it spread. It's wonderful. Great for hummingbirds, as I said, and
yeah, we
a nice
have a lot
native
of
one
that's in our yeah.
Yeah,
oh, great.
Probably because of the paintbrush.
Yep, and we have jewelweed and thistle and stuff all around us, so, yeah, we get quite a few of them. So I wanted to, you know, maybe give some away to some other people that enjoy growing some flowers.
Yeah, as long as you have an excess, because those are hard. You don't really get them at nurseries very much. Sometimes I think the seeds are available from some nurseries, but otherwise it is hard to grow because it is one of those. It's specialized. It needs so if you give a little soil with the plant, the people that you give it to might have better luck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks
Thank
a
you.
Lot. Yeah. Thanks, Susan. Matthew in Milwaukee, your turn now. Hi, Matthew.
How are you doing today?
Good.
All right, I have a Japanese magnolia in my backyard, which is an absolutely beautiful tree. And I'm kind of wondering how and when to trim it, because it's getting out of control.
I'm sorry to say I know nothing about cultivated plants.
Well, you're probably, I don't know. I don't know what I'd say about that. I'll tell you what, when you're talking about trees and you're talking about trimming, usually, wintertime is a good time to do it, any time between December and March, or December and through February is normally a good time. But you might check with your extension office down there. Your county extension office has got a horticulture specialist there who's going to do a good job. And if you call your county University of Wisconsin extension office, they'll be able to look that up for you. Might have that answer right off the top of their head. And I know the master gardeners there do a wonderful job. And so give them a call. Go to your county. You go to the phone directory, look up county, look up University of Wisconsin Extension, and go from there. Good luck. Thank you. Kent in Fitchburg, it's your turn next. Hi, Kent. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. You mentioned honeysuckle. And I have a huge pergola at the entrance of my house that goes at a right angle. It's at least 10 feet tall, and it's got, the wooden slats with wire on top at the very top. Well, the landscape architect recommended putting honeysuckle, which just taken at least 2 years to get up that metal rod to the pergola on the top. Am I creating problems with the birds wanting to nest in that at a height of 10 feet?
Is this a honeysuckle vine?
Yeah, it's a vine.
Yeah.
Vine.
There are a lot of, not a lot, but there are several species of native honeysuckle vines.
Oh, okay.
And so it probably is okay. I know there's some that are not, also honeysuckles that vines that aren't native to our state, but I don't know of any honeysuckle vine. Well, I think out east there's one that's invasive, but...
Sure. But, as opposed to what, like the bushy kind?
The bushy kind is the one that's most invasive in our area.
Right. But, no, this is at least 10, when it goes into full foliage, it'll be at least 10 feet off the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you're okay with that. I don't, that honeysuckle, there's no honeysuckle vine that's invasive in Wisconsin.
Okay, and I'm not making birds sick. You mentioned something about...
No, the honeysuckles are... No, I was talking about buckthorn being, but not honeysuckle.
Yeah, buckthorn will do it. They love, they eat those berries, but they get the runs from it.
Yeah, is there a way to care for these over the winter? Should I be mulching over these things or...
Honeysuckle?
Yeah.
Well, it's usually always good to mulch plants in the winter. One thing you should do is not put that mulch too close to the trunks or to the woody part that's in the ground.
Okay.
Because that would first of all, in the winter, it gives shelter to little mice that can get in near the plant. But also it can get moldy, too, or, you know, kind of harm the trunk of the plant, and even in the summertime if it gets too wet. So you should always have a little bit of air around the trunk of any woody plant.
Keep it away from the bark of the plant, that's
right.
For sure. Thanks for calling. Mariette Nowak, our guest today, author of Birdscaping in the Midwest. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking now about how you can create outstanding bird habitat with native plants. Mariette Nowak is our guest, who is author of Birdscaping in the Midwest, a guide to gardening with native plants to attract birds. It's published by Itchy Cat Press. Beautiful book. And certainly if you have some questions along those lines, plants, maybe you're interested in attracting migratory birds. Maybe you're interested in attracting hummingbirds. Maybe you're interested in, there's so many different kinds of birds that you might consider attracting with native plants. Why, here's the expert. Mariette's right here. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And we've had some questions about devil's paintbrush. And, typically the paintbrush plants are great plants, but somebody emailed in to say that devil's paintbrush is a common name for orange hawkweed. And orange hawkweed, Mariette, is not something I don't think that we want.
No, absolutely not. Orange hawkweed is not native. It's a European plant, and it is invasive. It's not invasive to the scent of buckthorn or some of those really terribly invasive plants, but it is considered a secondary invasive plant in many areas of the Midwest. So, no, do not try to spread that, and it would be better to try to control it and actually add native plants instead. So I'm glad that we found out that was orange hawkweed. I didn't realize that was the common name for it. Another common name for it.
Diana in Menominee, Michigan, it's your turn. Hi, Diana. Thank you for calling.
Hello. I live up here in the UP. When we first moved in, we had lots of whippoorwills, and now I haven't heard a whippoorwill in years.
Yeah. Well, whippoorwills are a bird, species that is declining a great deal, and I believe they're not really sure why. Has your habitat changed in any way up there?
Nope, I live on 15 acres of swamp.
Okay, well, that's, then it probably is some problem in their with place where they migrate or during their migratory stopover habitats. If your habitat hasn't changed, but maybe it's, changed in other areas too, we don't really know. They really have to find out more about why whippoorwills are declining. As far as I know, they're really not sure, but it is very sad. I love whippoorwills too, and they're very, very rarely heard in my neighborhood too.
Yeah, what habitat do they like?
Sort of a wet woodland, like she said.
Just like what Diana's got.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, Diana. I wish we had some more. Maybe somebody has... one of our bird experts has heard some more about it, too, and can fill us in. But I don't recall. I think you're exactly right, Mariette. They just don't know yet.
Yeah, I don't think they're sure. Yeah, but they're definitely declining. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, one of the reasons might be the amount of that type of land that has
been
taken out and
filled in. And even though it hasn't been lost up in Michigan there where she called from, it's being lost in many, many other
areas.
Many
other places, yeah. Thanks, Diana. Edie in Baraboo. Hi, Edie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Enjoying your show. It's wonderful. I love the birds. What I do to save a little money, and they seem to really, really like it, I go to the meat market here in town in Baraboo and get great big hunks of suet and big hunks. And I put it on top of the bird feeder, or you could put it in chicken wire or some kind of wire and hang it to the and by the trees or in front of your window. And the woodpeckers, the chickadees, the blue jays, everybody eats it.
That is a great idea.
And it's cheap.
Right. And some places, they don't even have that available anymore.
I think you have to find a regular butcher.
Yeah,
you know,
a butcher, right. But that is a great idea. That, of course, only do that in the really colder weather because that's not rendered. You know, it would be become rancid in hot weather.
No, it's very I feed it all year long.
Really?
But it goes so fast that it doesn't have time to get rancid.
Maybe that's it,
And if it's really hot, it will melt. And I'll have, grease on the bird feeder, but they eat it all the time. It never molds. It never has flies. It never has maggots.
No, okay. They must eat it fast enough. Well, that's great. Yeah, that is a good suggestion, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks,
okay.
Edie.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the call. We were talking the other day with Scott Craven, wildlife ecologist, and someone called in and said, well, I'm a deer hunter, and we put out the ribs and we put out the fat off of the deer carcass, and that works really well, too.
Oh, yeah. If you're a hunter, that's a great idea, too, yeah.
Harvey and Racine, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Harvey.
Hi. I'm on interstate, so I hope you can hear me. I was wondering if tough knots... wild edible seed plants, then it should follow that impatiens also are. Do you know anything about?
Touch-me-nots and impatiens is the question.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. That person who said that the seeds were edible, that was the first time I heard about that. There are some books, though, on edible wild plants and so forth, so you could check on that further, but I am not knowledgeable about that.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. Somebody else might have some knowledge of that and could call in, but otherwise there are some really good plants or some good books on wild edible plants, and probably we'll find it in there. Thanks, Harvey. Joe in Wisconsin Dells, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about scarlet tanagers. I have seen one at our farmhouse, and it was in a real dry time of year, and they came to the water. They didn't come to the bird feeder. I understand that they eat insects. Any way to attract them? They're such a beautiful, striking bird.
Oh, they are wonderful. The best way to attract them probably would be to have the plants that would furnish those insects. We were talking briefly about migratory birds, and when migratory birds like the scarlet tanager and the warblers too come through in the spring, one of the best plants are oaks and willows, which attract a lot of insects for them to feed on. And then, of course, in the summertime, the native plants generally have all kinds of different native plants, shrubs, trees, and so forth, generally attract more insects than non-native plants. That's been studied that the non-native plants are such that the insects don't have the enzymes to feed on them. And yet our native plants can survive very well with the insects because they have developed mechanisms to deal with insects, too. So, for example, oaks harbor lots of little grubs in the springtime, but then they'll develop tannins later in the summer that are not edible very much for insects. So they survive quite well that way, but they furnish all kinds of great insects for birds in the spring of the year. And, of course, if you want scarlet tanagers all year long, you want to have a lot of native plants that'll support insects all through the year.
Yep. Thank you for calling. Miles in Shell Lake, on to you now. Hi, Miles.
Hi. We have trouble trying to attract purple martins. We have a lakeside home, and right near the water, we have a nice apartment,
yeah,
birdhouse that's about 12 feet off the ground. And we've had them fly by, but we don't have them stop. I was wondering if there's something we've...
Hmm. Purple martins are hard to attract. It seems that they do better in the south than up here. However, one of the new things about attracting purple martins is to play a recording of their songs and near the box in the spring of the year. So that's something that you could try to encourage them to stop by.
Oh.
So that was kind of
that's a great idea.
Too.
That's very interesting. Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. And Mary in Dodge County, on to you. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I live in the township of Lebanon, and I just was going to remind people that it's really important to feed birds right now, because really with all this ice we've had, it isn't only the birds. We've had 14 wild turkeys in our yard today.
Oh my goodness!
and it's just unbelievable to watch them. And we had so much ice. We had the town come and plow, and we had a cornfield, and there was nobody had plowed it yet. So there's a lot of seeds. So our turkeys are just all along the edge of our yard now, going and scratching by the corn so that they can find food. And I mean, it's like we have at least we live on a dead end road, and I can see turkeys line up along the road. So it's really important to feed everybody right now. Black oil, sunflower seeds, cracked corn, even the squirrels. Even if you don't like them, they can't get to their food source.
Yeah, that ice is one of the worst things for birds, because that can even coat the seeds and so forth too, or even berries, so that they can't eat them.
So anyway, we can't keep up with feeding everybody who's coming to eat.
You need help, huh?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks for.
Anyway, it makes the day exciting.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling. Good reminder. Keep those bird feeders full. Robin in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi, Larry. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Sure. I have two questions. You talked about how to attract scarlet tanagers. How about how to attract bluebirds? And then what exactly is plain suet, please?
Okay.
First of all, about how to attract bluebirds, I have a whole chapter that is mainly on how to attract bluebirds. They're mainly savanna birds, so the best, there's so many things to say about them, but in the winter, if you're talking about this time of year, shrubs that retain their berries into fall and winter are very important for wintering bluebirds. But during the summer, the birdhouses can be very attractive to them. Of course, declining quite a bit in the 1950s, and then there was a big effort to put up birdhouses for them because their natural cavities were in such decline or were being taken over by starlings and so forth. So birdhouses have been a great boon to bluebirds, and the bluebird trails of many houses have been are in existence all over Wisconsin and so forth, and have really helped increase bluebirds. As far as the native habitat in your yard, usually they aren't in real urban areas, but if you have a kind of a larger suburban spread, or maybe even a rural area, it's much easier to attract bluebirds. And they like relatively short grass prairie, or if you don't have the soil for a short grass prairie, just mow an area a few times a year. But they do need a lot of insects. They feed mainly on insects, so make sure you have a lot of native plants that'll attract the insects for them. They usually like ground insects like grasshoppers and beetles and so forth. And even if you do have a little lawn, try to make sure this you have a few weeds in there, some clover and so forth to attract insects, and then have a flower patch nearby for them. And then they like about, a scattered shrub or tree, especially a tree or shrub about 100 feet from the birdhouse that you put up, so that they can be perching there. Perches are good for them, too. They perch and then hunt from their perches.
Okay.
And then the suet.
Oh, the suet.
Oh, the suet, yeah. I think they by plain suet, you're probably mean that fat that from the butcher shop that woman was talking about. Otherwise, you can get these little suet blocks, and sometimes they have seed in or, otherwise. But, those are the two kinds that you could be using.
And the suet blocks or the suet that you get in these little, square plastic containers, those have been processed. Or rendered, right. I should say.
Rendered, and they won't be as they won't become rancid, in hot weather.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I think I'm not sure the birds like them as well though as the plain old suet.
yeah, the plain fat from the meat. Yeah, that's probably that's what they probably nourished them in the past too. You know.
Yep. Sure. Thank you very much, Robin. And let's go to Mike in Castle Rock next. Mike, hello.
Hello. Regarding purple martins, what I used to see annually, people used to take down the apartments and clean them for the winter, and people used to put mirrors, on where the roof is. And I remember asking about that, and it was to attract the purple martins. And I don't think that's true, but I didn't see this when I lived in Ohio, but this is the northern part of their range. Like, you don't see barn owls up here too, or a little further south you will. So I think it's a stretch. The other thing I've noticed that a lot of people put up these big houses or apartments, but the purple martins like to glide in, and if there's a lot of trees around, they typically won't nest in those apartments.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. Yeah, you have to have a pretty open area, and you, like you said, pretty open and no trees around so that they can have a large area to
anything about the mirrors?
I don't know. I haven't heard about the mirrors. That's an interesting idea. Maybe it's another way to make the martins think that there are other martins around and make them more feel more at home. Okay. But I haven't heard of that before. That's an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm.
Might be worth a try.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. We have some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Jackie in Milwaukee, you're next. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. After I'm through with my spiel, Larry, tell about how you mount your suet so that the squirrels can't get at it. But right now, the point about the chickadees, if people are not birders for a long time, they expect the chickadees to come in and sit down and eat. They don't do that. They come in and they snatch a seed and they fly out to eat it.
Yeah,
that is true.
To help. But my question about plantings, I've got lots of evergreen low ones in front of the house, which gives some help when the birds are trying to hide. But in the back, I'm trying to find out what kind of a non-evergreen or a real dense bush or tree I could use that would be fast-growing. When you feed birds, you feed hawks, which I understand is normal. But a lot of the things, he goes right in after the birds. What kind of bushes or that are really, really dense that could keep him out a little bit more?
Well, that would partly depend on whether is it sunny or shady where you're thinking.
Some of it is open, some of it is not.
Yeah.
Well, there are several, like a lot of the dogwoods can get pretty thick, like gray dogwood. You can get a real thick planting of that, and that grows very well in sunny areas. That might be a good, and it could kind of grade into your shadier areas. That might be a good one. A lot of the shrubs, if you plant them close enough, they'll get thick.
Long do they take to grow?
Well, it would take a few years. They're not real fast. It depends. You could buy the larger ones, I suppose, and try.
Well, I might do that because I don't know if I have long enough to live to.
That's the way I feel these days, right? Yeah.
Right now, anybody that doesn't feed the birds, the bright red cardinals and the juncos and the chickadees, and I live in Milwaukee urban area, it is such a lift on days like this. And if I may give another hint, people have an inclination when they're going to put seed on the ground, they spread it out. Don't do that. Pile it in a heap, because if we get snow as we've had and the water, the freezing rain, the birds aren't going to be able to find it. If you pile it in a heap and one breaks through, they're able to find it. I also have the hanging bird feeders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just an idea.
Sure.
All right.
Sure.
Thanks a lot. We keep our suet, and we have a sort of a metal cage type arrangement, and the squirrels can still get at it a little bit, but it's a lot of work. And usually the squirrels don't bother the suet, my suet, very much, because I've got an actual metal cage to keep that suet in. And, you know, there's holes, obviously. The birds got to get at it, but it's tough for the squirrels, Jackie. It's real tough for the squirrels.
I had one other suggestion for a shrub. It's actually maybe more of a small tree, but the hawthorns might be very good for dense structure. And then they have those thorns that would maybe inhibit the mm-hmm. predator, you know, like the hawks, from flying through as easily. Mm-hmm. So hawthorns might be very good.
Yep, another good idea. Thanks, Jackie. Jamie in Soldier's Grove, we're on to you. Hi, Jamie.
Hello. I have a question about screech owls.
Yeah.
Or some kind of small owl that I see inside my barn at night. I put out mouse poison, and I was wondering if the owl would catch a sick mouse. Is it going to hurt the owl?
Yes, that is a danger, and we generally recommend not using, I think they call them rodenticides, because of that. That is a bit of a problem, because you want to get rid of your mice, and you don't want to have cats either. but maybe there is some way that you can trap the mice. Probably trapping them would be the best way for safety for the birds.
Yep.
Okay. These owls are only 7 or 8 inches tall.
That's right. Those are the little screech owls, and they can come in a gray phase or a red phase. They're just really cute.
Okay. Thank you.
All sure. right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Speaking of owls, this is we're into almost to the breeding season for the great horned owls.
Right.
They'll be starting pretty darn soon now, January.
They're starting already as far as calling and kind of courting. Courting has started.
We mentioned migratory bird gardens earlier, and we never really talked much about it. What do you include in a migratory bird garden?
Well, you have to think of the migratory times, spring and then fall. In spring of the year, most of the warblers and a lot of the other tropical birds that are neotropics, as they call them, migrants, that are going through are insect eaters, and they eat a lot of insects to fuel the rest of their migration. And willows and also oaks are some of the best trees. Pussy willows are great. That's fast growing. Oaks are a little slower growing, so you could plant both of them. And so some of the hawthorns, too, by the way, a lot of the flowers will attract a lot of insects, which will in turn, of course, attract the birds. Then in the fall of the year, what you want is there's a lot of fruit-eating birds in the fall, and you want plants like dogwoods that have a lot of fat in their berries for the birds. And, of course, viburnums are good, too. They last a little longer for the later migrants and even into winter. And then also in the fall of the year, you want a lot of the wildflowers and grass seed available for them. So leave those wildflowers and grasses, let the seeds there. Don't mow them down in the fall of the year. Leave them through the winter, and you'll help those migrating fall birds.
So some good tips, and there are a lot of great tips in this book. Birdscaping in the Midwest, Mariette Nowak is the author of the book. It's over 330 pages or thereabouts, with lots of great photos, lots of good information about plants that you can do, how to lay those plants out, all the different plants that will attract the different kinds of birds, and some great photography of the birds as well. And that book should be available anywhere, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it's available online at some of those, you know, like Amazon and Barnes & Nobles and so forth. But it's also available in most bookstores, as well the chain bookstores, as well as private or, you know, independent bookstores. Also, some of the nature centers and Wild Birds Unlimited stores and so forth are selling the books.
Oh, a great pleasure to talk with you, Mariette. Thank you so much for being with us. It was a quick 90 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you for asking.
Mariette Nowak, author of Birdscaping in the Midwest, A Guide to Gardening with Native Plants to Attract Birds. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.